Howdy, writers! KJ here, staring ahead into fall 2021 and trying to ignore the fact that it feels like staring into the abyss. Stop. Wait. That's really not where I meant to go with that. What I want to focus on is the other part of fall. Crunchy leaves, pumpkins, apples, school supplies, fresh starts. If that's the part of fall you want more of, maybe it's time for a new beginning as a book coach. Just imagine enrolling in the classes, meeting a cohort, learning all the ways coaches are editorial and emotional support for writers, and then starting to line up your first clients. Students working with Author Accelerator say they begin to book authors before they're even done with the course, and often end up being booked months in advance. Sound like fun? Agreed. Go to bookcoaches.com to learn more.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
All right, so welcome to Heather Chavez. Y'all, as I probably said in the introduction, Heather is the author of one amazing, fast-moving, can't-put-it-down, heck-of-a-ride thriller called No Bad Deed. Listen to this hook. A woman pulls over to help when she sees a man beating up another woman by the side of the road. He turns to her and says, "You let her die, I let you live." And, of course, she doesn't. Now, I mean, that hook, Heather, and the hook for your next book and how you develop those ideas and turn them into books instead of just situations, that's what I asked you to come talk about. But first, you know, welcome. Hi. And can you just, like, give the audience a little bit of background? I can see from your bio that you've always been a writer or a journalist, but, you know, tell us a little of the scoop.
Oh, yeah, I have always been a writer. I wrote creepy novellas when I was a teenager or young teenager. Then I switched to creepy poetry for a while. But then I started writing my practice books, which were just basically me learning how to write and finding my voice. And then while I was doing that simultaneously, I was working as a journalist, a reporter. And eventually I became an editor, copy editor, and really learned how to edit and cut those precious words. So, and then that made me a stronger writer. And so it's always been kind of a dual track for me, you know, journalism and writing, though now I'm no longer in journalism. I'm in public affairs, but I still write. I do, you know, write human interest stories and communications stuff. So
tell us how you start first. Like, I'm always curious about, like, how you first sat down and were like, this is going to be a book, even though it was your practice book. Like, there's just that huge difference between I'm writing a little, or I'm keeping my journal, or I'm, you know, writing poetry, and I'm sitting down with the intent to write a book.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, I call my other books practice books. I didn't try to query them seriously, which is why I call them practice books.
I have this book too.
Yeah.
Two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, but when I was writing my book, I felt like it was another practice book. I think it's, you know, I admire people who can write short stories. I wrote novellas when I was younger, but even those were, it's like, I always wanted to say more. I think mm-hmm. I'm just verbose. So I've always admired people who can write a really tight short story, because I've always known that novels is what I wanted to write, because I guess I can't shut up. So when I sit down, it's generally, I know that it's going to be a novel, full length novel.
And has the goal always been to be a traditionally published novelist?
It really has been. I think, as with anything, I think we often don't allow ourselves the space for that. You know, we don't take our art seriously. And I will say that's even a little bit true now. When someone asked, "Hey, what do you do for a living?" I still say, the day job first. Mm-hmm. I, you know, my daughter, if she's with me, she'll say, no, she's an author, you know, so she'll correct me. But yeah, no, I always wanted to be a traditionally published author, though I also tried not to make goals that I could not reach on my own. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have control over it.
Yes.
I feel like it's setting yourself up for failure. And as a writer, you're, well, maybe this is just me, but you know, you're in your head so much anyway that, you know, why give yourself another opportunity?
Right. You can't make a goal of get an agent or get published. You can make a goal of finish this book, yes, polish this book, query 10 agents, query 50 more agents. Though, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was,
that's really important.
Yeah. I want, my dream was to be a traditionally published author. I would say my goal was to write what I felt was a publishable book.
Gotcha. So like I said, what I have this whole conversation that I really want to have about the idea stuff, but because I have you here and because you have a full-time day job as well as novel writing, I know that my listeners would love to hear how and when you get the words done.
It is a challenge, some weeks more than others. Mm-hmm. Up until last week, I was able to write every day since Memorial Day. So like 3 months, nearly 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, not always a lot. It would often be 10 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. I've had to get really focused because prior to May, I had a 4 day a week job. So I was able to say, okay, Friday, Saturday, Sunday were my writing days. Monday through Thursday was for the day job. But now I've since accepted a promotion. That means I really don't have a set. I mean, I have a Monday through Friday job, but you never know what the day mm-hmm. is going to bring. So I found I've had to protect my morning time. So I get up earlier now. So I, you know, wake up 5:50, take a 45 minute walk, and then spend an hour writing. And that's pretty much how I do it during the week. And then no way can I write in the evenings because my mind is, like I say, beyond mush. It's full on brain soup by the time I get done. So it's basically that hour in the morning, and not always an hour. It's just whatever, you know, I have the mental capacity to mm-hmm. do in that moment. And then also the weekends. You know, I try to get writing in during the weekends. And I think it's consistency, you know?
Yeah. Do you block off? Like, do you look at Saturday and go, well, you know, I'm going to do X with my family here. And I know I'm going to do Y here. So X, you know, here's, I see my writing block. Do you think about that in advance?
I don't. It really changes depending on my current writing situation. Mm-hmm. Because for instance, right now my agent, I just sent my third book, and my second book, I just finished First Pass Pages. So I've proofed it. And so I'm in the plotting stage.
Yay, because that's what we're going to talk about.
And that's the fun part for me. I mean, because you don't have, you can think, you can do, you can go on a walk, you can do other things, and your brain's just working in the background the whole time. So it's a little bit more fluid in this stage because mm-hmm. it's just, but this stage never lasts long. Yes. You know, it's, you know,
you can work while you're driving in this stage.
Exactly. Exactly.
A nice long drive can be perfect.
I do that too.
Before we shift into this, which is totally what I want to talk about. I'm just, because again, I know people will be curious. I'm guessing you don't have any kids that you would have to help get out of the house at this point.
No, yeah. No, I do not. I have a 20. I no longer have a teenager, a 20 and a 23 year old. Yeah. And so,
I have teenagers, but same, it makes a huge difference to your day. So anyone who's hauling, you know, one or three or five or however many, school, like young school age children out of the morning, out of the house in the morning, we know you're not going to spend 10 minutes or an hour or anything unless you get up at like 4.
Oh yeah. You know, I talk about, you know, with my kids, how, you know, I took 20 units at UC Berkeley while I work full time. I've written two books while I work full time. That being said, nothing is harder than having children and writing.
Yes.
It's just so hard. I mean, I did it with my practice books. Yeah. That's the reason they took longer.
Yeah. And, you know, it's doable, but it's just different. So I never I never want to give anyone the idea that we are proposing just get up and sit in a lovely little spot with your mug and maybe make it an inspirational mug and, you know, have some tea steam coming out and the words will come and your children. Yeah. Yeah.
Enjoy the sun. Not writing window.
Please do those things.
No, it's funny because, you know, when I was raising the children and writing and I was working full time too, I wrote in the most unusual spots. I mean, I admit I even wrote in the bathroom sometimes with the door
done
shut.
Done that. Yeah, not absolutely.
Not that kids respect the closed bathroom door.
But no, but it helped. Especially when they were sort of preteens, because then they kind of did. Yeah. They just stand outside it and yell, which was a little better than them actually coming in.
Right.
Yeah. Been there. All right. Well, so yeah, the idea stage. So you make these amazing twisty turny plots with these great premises. And I want to read the new one for people. This is me sort of summarizing, but it's after a night when six friends partied on the outskirts of town, one girl was never seen again. 6 years later, another teenager has disappeared and the dangerous game those friends were playing isn't over. So like you do these, you come up with this premise, like, you know, what if somebody disappeared and then, you know, 6 years later, somebody else disappeared? Or what if you stopped to help someone and the person was like, no, you know, you help her and I kill you. But I know, and any writer knows, that a premise is not a book. So I just, how do you make that leap?
Well, you know, it was funny because with my first book, No Bad Deed, you know, that was inspired by an event. You know, I was picking my daughter up at school and she, you know, we saw this young boy, probably 13, 14, who was just jumped by two other boys about the same age. And he, it's, you know, before I could even decide what to do, they kind of scattered. So I had that germ of the idea, what should I have done? What would I have done differently if it had been a remote road or if it had been, you know, night or my daughter hadn't been in the car with me? So that started it. Like, that was the idea. But then I had to decide whose story is it to tell, because that same incident, like you said, a premise is not a book. That same incident is going to mean different things to different people. You know, one person, you know, maybe it, they, you know, it stokes anxiety from when they were young. And it turns into a totally different book. Maybe in this case, she's not, you know, she's very impulsive and reckless and she gets out of the car. Not everybody would. This character does. So I really try to start. I start with the premise or the idea, but then I decide whose story it is to tell and how this incident is going to affect this particular person. Like,
right. That was another question I had, was because we need, typically you need a character with a flaw that goes along with and cause, like, they've got all the crap they're going to deal with, but they have to be causing it. Like, if their flaw isn't contributing a lot to the things that are going wrong with them, then you don't have a book. So, so it sounds like you come up with the crap they're dealing with first and then the flaw, or?
I think of the situation first. At least with No Bad Deed, I did. I was spurred by the situation and that first line, you know.
I love the first line. The first,
you know, that is the only part that never changed. That book, I...
And that's if my kids had been in the car, everything would have been different, right?
Yeah. And that pretty much was what my starting point, my kernel was. It was different for Blood Will Tell. Blood Will Tell, it was really about the sister relationship that came first, even though it was kind of unusual, but it was about my first impulse was, what if this older sister who's very protective of her younger sister, what if this younger sister did something horrible?
Really bad.
You know, really bad. And it was, you know, inspired by, you know, more personal stuff than No Bad Deed probably was. But it was also, but then I got the hook. It's like, okay, what if you got pulled over for an Amber Alert? Your car was used in an abduction, you think. What would you do if you know it wasn't, you know?
For it wasn't by you.
Yes. Was, and who else has access to your key?
Right.
So it kind of goes hand in hand, because I think without knowing a little bit about who the character is, you can't really progress with the plot, because mm-hmm. it's all about what that person will do in a situation. So that's part of the, like I said, thinking for book four.
Right.
And it's just, I've got the idea, the hook, but I found the character, but I don't know who she is. I don't know what her history is, what her core beliefs and, you know, misbeliefs are. So I don't know how it's going to progress.
Did you go through a lot of hooks and disregard them as you were choosing landing on this one?
I wish. I read these interviews or hear these interviews from people, and they talk about all these ideas that they have. And I really fall in love with mm-hmm. my character and my idea. And honestly, that was, you know, I just sent my hook and my basic idea of the character to my agent, and he's like, you know what? I love it. So it was just such a relief, because I'm thinking, well, if you didn't, I don't have another one. So, you know, so I don't, you know, it takes a while for me to really fall in love with an idea, because mm-hmm. you have to fall in love with your book. Otherwise you don't want to read it for the 15th time.
So as you're sort of playing with book four, and you know, you have your hook, are you thinking of ways it could play out, and then maybe thinking of a different way it would play out, and then a different way? So is it more like, you know, you have this situation, but now you're choosing among, you're trying to pick an option that's going to work?
I'm trying to pick a person that's going to work, because, mm-hmm. for instance, part of who they are as characters really drives, you know, obviously the three books I've written so far, but, you know, I need to know why she is where she is when it happens. I've got mm-hmm. the incident that's going to happen, but as far as what happened before to right. get her to this spot, and I haven't decided yet. I haven't figured it out. I don't know if she's, I think she might be a musician. A lot of my other three characters are pretty more analytical a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, science driven. One of them's a counselor. One of them's a high school math teacher or middle school math teacher. So they're, you know, I want her to be kind of a creative type, but the only thing is then, well, will that work with the plot?
Right.
You know, because it has to be her story. It has to be what, you know, she has to drive the action in this case. It's a female. And mm-hmm. She's in it, but I know that, but I haven't decided who she is quite yet.
Have there been times where you've gotten a little bit down the road with a character who's, you know, got a particular career or a particular twist or a particular character trait, and then you get a little bit down the road and you're like, oh yeah, no, she can't actually be a clockmaker, because that just... you know, if she were, then she would know this, and then this is not going to work. Have you had that experience?
I think, you know, I have in the opposite direction. You know, with originally, for instance, Frankie was going to be very into physics, and I actually talked to a physicist. I actually plotted a bunch of stuff with physics, and then I realized it really didn't have much to do with what she needed to do,
you know,
what she needed to do in that moment. And I didn't want to overly complicate it, because I almost feel like if you have this physicist in your plot, it better work for what she's.
Yeah. She better need to be, if you're going to bother to have a physicist, she has to need to be right. a physicist. And, you know, I have obviously only read book one because the others aren't published yet, but your character is a veterinarian. And being a veterinarian, it maybe isn't true that if she weren't a veterinarian, none of it would have happened. But being a veterinarian is a very important part of the book.
Right.
Like, it again and again and again, it affects what choice she makes or what happens around her. So,
and I think that is, like, for instance, in the next book, she is a middle school math teacher, but then I deliberately, the reason she had to be, I mean, she was going to be different. I considered different occupations, but I also thought, well, it's summer. I want her to have summer off.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of teachers work summers, but she has a 4-year-old, she doesn't. And so I thought that's perfect because she can have the summer off. So, very analytically. So
when we, and I also feel like if you have it, like, physics is a little mystical. Does that make, so if you're going to have a physicist, it needs, like, you need some universal physicist-y stuff that I get that. So as you're going down the road with your potential physicist or your person that's, how are you actually writing your way towards this? Or are you just sort of plotting your way towards this? Do you know what I like? Are you pantsing and it's not, or are you thinking, or are you writing like just little bits?
I do it both ways. Like with the physicist specifically, mm-hmm. I did, because I wanted, while it was fresh in my brain after talking to this physicist a couple of times, I did actually plot little sections that I could insert just because I wanted the information, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I also wanted, like, whenever I do anything that's outside of my area of expertise, I want someone who has that area of expertise to look at it. Like with the veterinarian scenes, I had a somebody who just graduated with a veterinary degree look at it. Mm-hmm. And so I do try to have, like, my police scenes, I have a retired police lieutenant look at it. And so with the physicist, I wanted him to look at it all in all the physics parts.
Right.
So I do that if it's kind of complicated, but if it's more like she's a middle school math teacher on summer break, that isn't really something I really have to think too hard about because she's on break. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I'm very much a plotter. I have to know the beginning, middle, and end. Even if I go off track, I try to keep it, my process of discovery is in the outline. That's where I have the fun of thinking and plot, the creative part. And then I write, and then I go off track, and then I get really anxious. but then I try to get it back in. And I don't have a firm idea, like with the second book, I knew how it needed to end as far as character arc wise, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what that would look like, if that makes sense. So it's like, hey, yeah, this thing happens. Don't know how, but this is what happens. And so, whereas with book three, the one I just finished, I actually had the climax in my head before anything else. I had the first scene and the climax. And by climax, I mean everything leading up to the final scene, even the epilogue. I knew all of it. And so that was kind of different because I felt like I knew the characters and their motivations really well. And the same with book two, because I had to rewrite it extensively. I rewrote it, and so actually did that with book one too. And so I learned the characters better. Mm-hmm.
So when you say you're a plotter, do you plot by handwriting things? Do you type out an outline? Are you writing like a sentence for each, what does that look like?
It has varied per book. Mm-hmm. With the first book, I had an outline, but it was just the key scenes. But it also, when it started out as a third person, three point of view, and I threw 2/3 of it out and switched to first person and rewrote the third that I kept. So when I did that process, I didn't plot. I didn't go back to my outline and revise it.
Right.
I just was like, okay, I already know the story. I've written the story. So I just kind of went with it. But I already had a whole book as a practice outline. So it was not really pantsy.
Yeah, that's how I did my second one too. And it's my life goal not to repeat that process.
I did that with my second book. I actually started a whole new book. I mean, mm-hmm. But I knew the characters. And part of the reason that the first couple of attempts at it didn't work was because the most important part of that book to me was the sisters and their relationship and their kind of, friction. Mm-hmm. So, they were not in the book together that much in the first book. And so I realized, hey, this is kind of the most important thing to me personally. And the thing, their relationship. And so once I committed to that, the third draft with a whole new plot, actually came so fast. I'm not a fast writer, but it came like lightning fast because I knew the characters so well. It's kind of like and book three was third person for the first time, with these two books. That the first two are first person and multiple. There are two points of view that are equally weighted, kind of, even though there's a protagonist, obviously. But I did feel like this one, I had to plot every scene because mm-hmm. I needed to make sure that they were working together. So,
and this one is with your agent at this point.
Yes.
So you don't even know. You could be, sorry, let me not even say it.
But, no, yeah. You can say it now that I've thought about it.
Well, but you might not be.
Yeah.
I had an editor just be like, yeah, I really, this is great. Let's rewrite the whole thing. Yeah. So it could yet happen, but I'm audibly knocking on wood on your behalf that it doesn't happen. Do you think we all will always have to sort of write the book to figure out what book we want to write? I hope not.
I think the heart of my books remains the same. And even though I plot and even though a lot of it goes according to what I planned, a lot of it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think so, because like even with No Bad Deed, Daryl was supposed to be in one scene, but then I really liked him as a character. And and so I created new work for him to do. And that's the thing, is that some of the scenes have always been there and will always be there. And, but kind of the stuff that goes in the periphery is kind of what changes for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like the side characters or the setting. I just changed the setting in one of my scenes because I'm like, no, that's not working for me.
I frequently realize that my characters have done nothing other than eat.
Yes. I actually realized that with the last book I wrote, and I'm sure there will be edits. It's just like, just let me keep like both of my characters and
right.
the plot.
But there's just that moment when you're like, oh, every deep conversation they have is in the car. Like, okay, I need to take one of these conversations and have them take a walk or something. I have absolutely been there.
Yeah, I just, one of the book I just finished, the first draft, it was like, why is she always at her ex-husband's house? Is she moving in? That doesn't make sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, these things happen. Well, what is your biggest challenge when you look at, like, what's your biggest challenge with the writing?
All of it? I think getting the words down, because, and I think that to me, the only way I can, because I do get in my own head, is to write every day.
Mm-hmm.
Or every other day. I mean, I can skip a day, but if I skip more than that, it takes me a really long time to get back into it. I have so much else in my head that it's hard to get back into the routine. So I think keeping the routine is huge for me, and getting words down and not overthinking them. Like, not, in the beginning when I was first starting, I was so in my head that I would edit you know, and I would rewrite the first scene.
Mm-hmm.
Have we all done that? Like rewritten the scene and like, okay, go on to scene two.
And then my editor kept telling me, well, these first two chapters are really overwritten, which I thought meant that I had sort of polished, but it turned out to mean something else. And I've actually kind of lost my mind. Like, I'm so set. Like, my personal definition of overwritten was not what she was trying to say to me. It was more like, I think it was that I kept repeating, like, that was what she was trying to say. But I was like, yes, they've totally been overwritten because I've rewritten them 17,000 times. Yeah,
that's a thing. That happens.
That's a thing. I think it'd be better to rewrite the end multiple times, but...
Which I did for No Bad Deed. That was the final thing that was polished to the degree that it was the end, was the climax. Yeah.
Well, it's very exciting. I couldn't stop. Yeah. And it gave me, like, it invaded my head. It didn't give me bad dreams exactly. It just, the voice was, they were like, yeah, it kind of did give me bad dreams, but that's okay. Read it anyway. It's not, you know, read it during the afternoon because I loved it. So just one last writing related question. We always say on the podcast, it's a thing among us that when one of us is like, I got really lucky, we're all like, no, you got lucky because you worked hard. Because as women, that's a thing we do. We're like, oh, I got really lucky. And we do get lucky. And, you know, many of us are super privileged and that's separate, but we also put in the work. So we like to say fortune favors the prepared. And I wanted to ask you if you can think of a time that being prepared helped you to get lucky or take advantage of some luck.
Well, I think my agenting and publishing journey in general, because I didn't actively submit the first practice books, I think it looks like, wow, you were lucky. The first book you tried to get an agent with, you know, you signed with him 20 days later, you know, how did that happen? And he was also one of my first choices. Mm-hmm. And you know, how you were so lucky. I had to do 100, you know, 200 queries. And before I got my agent, but the truth is that I don't think, like you said, you're lucky. I didn't feel brave enough, I don't think, to query before then.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like luck, but it's decades of working on my book.
Yes. Yeah. You were lucky quotes, because the query was rock solid. And I assume that the pages that you didn't like sudden sort of, you didn't fly out with your first draft like so many people did. You did the work to be ready.
Right. And the same with the submission process. We went out on a Friday and the preempt came in the following Friday. So it was a week. And that's, you know, that is lucky. And to a degree, it is very, very lucky. But at the same time, I mean, I worked at, like, I threw out 3 1/3 books. In fact, No Bad Deed, I threw out 2/3 of the first version of that.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's published is, I think, probably draft 8, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and before I queried, it was draft 4,
mm-hmm.
5. And so, yeah, it's the little iceberg tip that's sticking up that, you know, everyone sees and they don't see the you know, decades of writing on my phone and, you know, saying, oh no, this is no good and starting over and, you know.
Yeah. Very few people succeed in this business via luck. But luck plays a part. Luck plays a part. And we love it. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, luck.
Yes.
Let us bless you. So let's, I would just love to take a step back and talk about what we have been reading. We always like to hear a favorite book, or not a favorite, something that you are currently reading and loving, or a favorite. Your call.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm currently between books because I just finished The Family Plot by...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've seen that.
And I loved it. And my mind has been so busy lately that I'm finding books are kind of my salvation right now, to be honest. We just lost our dog last week and we've had a lot of challenges. And so, you know, I've been very lucky that I've read a couple of good books that have just been able to just pull me out, you know.
Everybody wants that. Tell us what books are like getting you out of your own head and into someone else's, please.
Well, you know, it's funny because my books that get me out are not going to be the books that get.
Well, of course. People will be like, yeah, that one's not for me. But
Family Plot.
Uh-huh.
For Your Own Good by Samantha Downing. So I'm just my next book up is Where I Left Her by Amber Garza. So they're very dark, twisty books that are those are the kind that are getting me out. You know, I probably should read something really light, but
not if you don't want to. I mean, that's I think it's also so frequently true that, you know, we write what we read, right? And you write a good, solid, dark, twisty novel. So it's no surprise that you would want to read them.
Right, right.
And if you told me that you only read lighthearted romances and were trying to write a dark, twisty thriller, I would be like, maybe you want to just read. You have to read in your genre. You got to read what you.
Yeah, right.
I think. Well, I've just finished No Bad Deed, so there y'all go. And it was just really absorbing. And the truth is that I am actually not a reader in general of dark, twisty thrillers, but I love this one, and I handed off to my husband, who is a reader of dark, twisty thrillers, and I said, this is better than the last three I gave you. So I won't say, you know, which were all great, but I was like, this one, you know, go for it. So he's off to the races with that one, and I know he's going to enjoy it. So if you are a lover of dark, twisty thrillers, everybody, go find No Bad Deed.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Where can reader, like, what's your favorite social media? Where should people follow you?
I am on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But I would say Instagram, I'm probably most active.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And I am HR Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
But the easiest way to remember is probably go to my website, heatherchavez.com, because all my social links are there and it's easier probably.
Yeah.
Easy to remember.
I love that. I always, whenever I go to someone's website, authors take note, whenever I go to your website and there aren't those little symbols up in, you know, the corner that are like, here's Facebook, here's Insta, here's Twitter. I'm like, unless you don't do it, in which case props. But if you do, come on. I happened to be looking up Fanny Flagg recently and she doesn't do any of it. And she doesn't even have a website because she's Fanny Flagg. The rest of us are not, and we do these things, and we need to make sure people can find it.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much. And we always close out the show with the same saying, which usually one of my co-hosts get to say. So I will enjoy it. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop. Thank you.